Usually I start my Dhamma talk with the recitation of the Namo Tassa three times in Pali. And you're welcome to join in the recitation. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Today, we have all started this inner journey of exploration and understanding. And so today I would like to talk about one quality which is very important and very basic for our practice of liberation and wisdom and kindness, compassion. So it's about mindfulness. And, you know, it would be so nice if everybody were committed to deal with everything in a very mindful and careful way. So, you know, would be nice if everybody were dealing mindfully and carefully with other people, or mindfully and carefully dealing with animals or and other living beings, or mindfully and carefully dealing with the environment, or mindfully and carefully dealing with difficult emotions, or mindfully and carefully dealing with the resources available to us. And the list could go on. Ajahn Chah was a very famous and well-known meditation master in Thailand. He lived in the last century, and he repeatedly told his students, his disciples, that they should develop as much mindfulness as possible. He had said, "Develop as much mindfulness as you can. We become Buddha-like when we have mindfulness because the mind is awake. It knows, it sees, and it is restrained." So mindfulness is a quality of the heart and mind that can never get too strong. And this is in contrast to other qualities that can become too strong, like, for example, energy. So if energy is applied too strongly and not appropriately, then too much energy can lead to tension, can lead to headaches. But with mindfulness, we do not need to be afraid that it could become too strong or too deep or too constant. You know, mindfulness nowadays, it's booming. Now there are countless courses on mindfulness. Mindfulness is marketed and sold, or mindfulness is used as a business model. It all started with the MBSR courses, the mindfulness-based stress reduction. But nowadays one can find mindfulness-based courses for almost everything, like mindfulness and resilience, or mindfulness with children, or mindful cleaning. So courses for cleaning stuff, how to do it mindfully. and so on. Again, the list could go on. You know, this is all good and has its justification, and there are positive effects. But we have to understand that the Buddha, when he talked of mindfulness, he had something different in mind. So because this quality of mindfulness is something so basic and so important in our practice of Vipassana meditation, of trying to see things as they really are, we should really know what mindfulness in the Buddhist context means and how we should apply it or develop it. So the explanations on mindfulness that will follow are based on the Buddha's teaching. I will try to describe the nature and the role of mindfulness in all of the Buddha's teaching. And first of all, we have to keep in mind that the teaching of the Buddha has only one goal, namely to realize inner freedom, to fully awaken. We also can call it enlightenment or liberation. So it's to become free from everything that makes us unhappy, from everything that causes suffering, dissatisfaction. Or in other words, we can say a teaching to find unshakable happiness and inner peace. And in order to reach this goal, the Buddha proposed a very pragmatic way that can take anyone who is interested to inner freedom. And this way, this path, is based on some important factors, qualities. Actually, they are indispensable. You know, this way or this path, it's also referred to as the Eightfold Path. And as you probably will know, one of these eight factors is sammasati, right mindfulness or appropriate mindfulness. So in regard to sammasati, what is right mindfulness? And as a basic answer, right mindfulness, like all the other factors of the path, right effort, right livelihood, and so on. So all these factors must always be in the service of liberation. So right mindfulness, for example, it must contribute to strengthening and developing the wholesome and supportive qualities on the one hand, and on the other hand, it must weaken and finally eliminate the harmful and unwholesome qualities. And so in this way, then the causes of dissatisfaction, of suffering, can be weakened and overcome. And in this way, the causes for happiness and inner peace can be strengthened, can be brought to perfection. So this sammasati, right mindfulness, how strong or how good must this mindfulness be that this inner transformation is possible? And here the Buddha gives us the answer. We can find it in the Satipatthana Sutta, the discourse on the foundations of mindfulness, or the discourse on the establishments of mindfulness. And there the Buddha said that Just as much mindfulness should be developed as is necessary from knowledge and understanding. And this is said in the refrain, which comes again and again, relating to all the four establishments of mindfulness. In regard to the first foundation, the body, it says, or else, mindfulness that there is a body is simply established in the practitioner to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and mindfulness. So this Pali word for mindfulness, sati, that the Buddha used, originally sati had the meaning of to remember, you know, in the way we use it to remember something from the past, or, you know, what we had for breakfast this morning, or what we did last week, or what we did 1 year ago. Of course, we can also remember texts, we can remember people, and so on. But then the Buddha also used sati in the way of presence of mind, awareness, or mindfulness, being alert and attentive. In Burma, in Burmese, in the Burmese language, they have a lot of Pali words integrated, because Buddhism has been, you know, in Burma for many, many centuries. But when sati is expressed with a Burmese word, then it is the word for to not forget. So when we do not forget, we remember. We remember to be present, to be aware, to be mindful. So if we want to gain liberating insights into these processes of the body, of the heart and the mind, then we have to be really present and carefully observe what is happening. We have to watch, to feel what is going on. So if we are not present, if we are not really there, then we cannot really know what is happening. And in addition to be really present and there with the experience, we also need to be really interested in what is happening. We need to be curious about what is happening there, be it in the body or be it in the heart and the mind. You know, with curiosity and interest, we look, we explore, we feel, we watch, we observe, because we really want to see more clearly, more deeply what these processes are like. So when we are equipped with mindfulness and also interest and curiosity, we have already achieved quite a bit. But then our inner attitude, the way we approach our practice, this is just as important. I like the description of sati by the late monk Venerable Vijaya. Venerable Vijaya was originally from Vietnam, and he had also practiced meditation in Burma under Mahasi Sayadaw. Later on, he settled down in France and he had established a meditation center south of Paris. I went there a couple of times. And so the way he described sati, it's like this. Sati, c'est prendre soin du présent. It's in French. It means sati, this is to take care of the present. So to take care of every moment, or to devote yourself fully to every moment, turning your heart, your mind to the present experience with a caring attitude, with a loving attitude. And so I think this caring and loving attitude is very, very important for our meditation practice. If we can be present with a loving and caring attitude, it makes the practice so much easier. We can be so much more relaxed. You know, then we can deal with all the experiences, the good ones and the bad ones, with care, with kindness. You know, this careful attitude in regard to each experience can be compared to how we deal with a very fine Chinese porcelain. Let's say maybe your grandmother has a set of very fine Chinese porcelain in her cupboard. So if you go and open the cupboard and take out a cup of this very fine Chinese porcelain, you're most likely very careful, very attentive to take this cup into your hand. And you're very careful not to hold it too tightly, and of course not to let it fall to the ground. So if we really care about something, then we are really fully present. Then we are not absent. Then we are fully engaged. And we can observe this very well in children. You know, whether they are playing with something in their room or whether they are playing out in the forest, they are fully engaged and completely immersed in what they are doing. Of course, we also have such moments time and again, you know, not only in meditation, also during our day-to-day life. You know, it can be when we are weeding in our garden, or when we cut the fabric to make a new blouse. In such moments, we are not distracted. Then we are really mindful and present. Then we are really in contact with the present experience. And when we are really in contact with the experience, this creates a familiarity. And you know, in the practice of meditation, being in contact with what is happening in our body, in our heart and mind, then we really become familiar with these experiences. The famous Japanese Zen master, Dogen, he was once asked, how does the awakened mind manifest? And his answer was, this is the mind that is familiar with all things. So mindfulness, this quality of the heart and the mind, is really this quality that brings us into contact with each experience. And brings us into contact with each experience just as it is. And this leads us to other qualities or aspects that we find in mindfulness, in sati. You know, to be in contact with each experience just as it is also includes that sati, mindfulness, does not manipulate. Sati has no tendency to change the experience, the object. And sati does not want to exercise control. When sati is present, it has the ability to simply reflect the experience. Sati is like a mirror that only reflects what is in front of it. Sati does also not evaluate the experience. It does not evaluate or judge the experience, the pain or the strong desire. And for mindfulness, there are no good or bad experiences. There are only experiences as they are right now. And so this also means that mindfulness includes the full acceptance of the processes as they arise in our body, heart, and mind. It accepts things as they are. And so in this way, mindfulness can also be quite confronting. My German friend, Renate Seifert, who is also a meditation teacher, in one of her books, she has said in this regard, mindfulness brings all our sunny and dark sides to light. In this sense, it is confronting. Of course, sometimes or many times, it's not so nice what mindfulness brings to light, but it's important that we come to see these things. And there is another Zen master, Suzuki Roshi. He has made Zen popular in the US, and many people know his book, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. And he had said, we observe everything with respect and interest, not to manipulate, but to understand what really is. And when we see what really is, the heart becomes free. Again, here we are, what I've said in the beginning. Mindfulness must be in the service of liberation. We are not mindful for the sake of being simply mindful, but we develop and strengthen mindfulness so that we can free ourselves from all painful and unsatisfying conditions, to see clearly what really is, so that we can develop understanding, wisdom. So mindfulness is a very fundamental and important quality in our practice, but by no means is it the only one. There are many other qualities which also need to be cultivated, strengthened, you know, qualities such as confidence or effort, patience, concentration or joy, kindness, and so on and so on. But mindfulness takes kind of a leading role. My main teacher in Burma, Sayadaw Ujanaka, he has explained this fact in the following way. He had said, the practice of Vipassana meditation means to observe the processes in body and mind with a mind led by mindfulness. So it's a mind that is led by mindfulness, but of course, other qualities must be present there as well. But mindfulness is like the leader. As I've said in the Satipatthana Sutta, the discourse on the foundations of mindfulness, these foundations are explained by the Buddha how to practice. Now I want to outline the practice of Vipassana meditation in a more general way. You know, basically we can say that we should be mindful of and observe everything carefully. And everything means all the processes or experiences in our body and in our heart and mind. That means all the physical and mental experiences become the object of our mindfulness. And this covers the whole range of our experiences. So there is nothing that cannot become the object of our Vipassana meditation. And this is really an important point that we must understand. If we want to understand and realize the true nature of all that exists, then we really have to deal with everything. We have to deal with all that exists. We cannot simply select certain objects or experiences, you know, saying, I only want to observe what is pleasant and what I like. We must include everything. Bhikkhu Bodhi is this American monk and great scholar who has translated many of the suttas, the discourses. And in his introduction to the Majjhima Nikaya, he has written the Satipatthana Sutta sets forth a comprehensive system called Satipatthana, designed to train the mind to see with microscopic precision the true nature of the body, feelings, states of mind, and mental objects. So here, the four foundations of mindfulness are mentioned: the body, feelings or feeling tones, states of mind, and mental objects. Also, Joseph Goldstein, the well-known American meditation teacher, he also emphasizes the importance of this all-inclusive mindfulness. He says, mindfulness brings the quality of equilibrium and balance to the mind. It helps the mind to be very focused on the one hand and to watch the passing show in a relaxed attitude on the other hand. So what he So when he says, you know, to watch the passing show, of course, this refers to all the sensory impressions, or it refers to all the experiences that we can be aware of at the six sense doors in our body, in our mind. So, as we can see, everything can and should become the object of our Vipassana meditation, or the whole passing show should be observed. And of course, this not only refers to formal sitting meditation, but this practice of being mindful is an all-encompassing practice that should take place throughout the day. So the same principle of being interested and mindful should be extended to all activities throughout the day. So what we should do is try to establish a constant mindfulness for, you know, as much as we can throughout the day. Or in other words, we can say this means to take care of every moment with interest and curiosity. You know, this can be during the sitting meditation, during the walking meditation, or standing meditation, lying meditation, but also being present with interest and curiosity, with a careful attitude throughout other activities, such as taking a shower, or eating, brushing the teeth, taking off the clothes, and so on. When we, or if we want to understand these processes in our body, heart, and mind as they are, we need to really pay attention to them. And they are happening all the time, not only in a sitting meditation, not only in a formal walking meditation. Everywhere and all the time, they are present. Many meditators who are new to the practice, and I was the same when I started to practice meditation, I just had the idea that, you know, the practice of meditation is to sit down, close your eyes, and sit still there, not moving. And walking meditation for me, it was just a little bit, you know, stretching my limbs and having a little break. And eating, taking shower, and all these things was just things you need to do so that you could go back to meditation. But, you know, as I've come to understand with time and through my practice, liberating insights and deep understanding of reality, they have nothing to do with a particular posture or place. These liberating insights and deep understanding, they have much more to do with the willingness to understand reality and to become free. Many nuns and many monks at the time of the Buddha experienced the big breakthrough, that is complete liberation, full awakening, not during the sitting meditation, but it could have been, could be, or it was during the walking meditation, or by being mindful, being really present with any activity they were engaging in. We find these accounts in the verses of the nuns and the monks, the Therigathas, the Theragathas. And one example is the nun Patachara. One day, in the evening, she first washed her feet before entering her little hut. And as she was washing her feet, she was very mindful and she noticed that the water ran down the slope and then how it gradually seeped into the ground. Then she went into her hut, sat down for meditation, and before she closed her eyes and started her meditation, she had her oil lamp burning. So she took a pin to put out the oil lamp. And just as she put the wick down into the oil, the light went out. For her, that was the moment of full awakening. And in her words, in the Therigatha, it says, in her words, having taken a pin, I pushed the wick right down. And just as the lamp went out, so all the illusion of the heart went too. So we should never forget that, you know, the big breakthrough, liberating insight for liberation, can happen anywhere, anytime. But we need to be present. We need to be there. We need to be in contact with the actual experience. The great masters of meditation, such as Ajahn Chah, Thai monk who lived in the last century, or also Mahasi Sayadaw, the Burmese monk and meditation teacher who also lived in the last century. So they never got tired to emphasize the importance of maintaining mindfulness throughout the day, which means to be in close contact with the experience in all postures, in all activities, at every moment. One student of Ajahn Chah, it was a Thai monk, he related the following of his master Ajahn Chah. So in the words of this Thai monk, the first thing Ajahn Chah told us to do was to establish a stable mindfulness, to make it continuous, not to get lost or distracted. Mindfulness was his main emphasis, making mindfulness constant and smooth, without interruptions, not allowing it to be broken, whether standing, walking, sitting, lying down, or eating, you had to be mindful, because if you lose your mindfulness, it is the same as losing your life. Care, attention, and respect had to be given to every action. Ajahn Chah tirelessly admonished the monks when they were heedless. He drummed into them how essential it was to sustain mindfulness in every activity. So in these words of this Thai monk, we also find some of the factors that strengthen mindfulness. In the commentary, we find a total of 9 factors that can strengthen mindfulness. Here, there are 2 of these. One is an engaged and respectful practice is conducive to strengthening mindfulness. And the second one is a constant and continuous observation of all the processes in the body, heart and mind. So, you know, we can see that this practice of Vipassana meditation is an all-encompassing practice that is not limited to certain hours on the cushion, that is not limited to going for a retreat to a center. And of course, there are many ways to practice, many entrance doors into liberating insights. And people are different, have different tendencies and inclinations. And, you know, the Buddha was so skillful because with his deep understanding and great wisdom, as well as compassion, he exactly knew what was the most helpful way to practice for people. At the time of the Buddha, there was a monk who ordained as a monk, and he had another monk who was his preceptor, who was his teacher. And so his teacher first taught him the Vinaya, the rules of the monk. So these rules regulate what the monk must do, what he cannot do, how he must behave, and so on. And once he had studied the Vinaya, that monk sent him to another monk to study the suttas, the discourses. And so that monk explained him, you know, in the suttas, it is explained what is right speech, or how to practice the jhanas, or about the foundations of mindfulness, or about the six sense doors, about vedanas, and so on. And after he had studied that, he was sent to a third teacher who taught him the Abhidhamma, which is like an analytical description of absolute reality. And this teacher explained him the wholesome and unwholesome mental factors, explained him the elements, the sense doors, depending origination, and so on. So this monk studied hard, and finally he got a lot of knowledge, but then he knew so much that he actually was confused. And, you know, he said there are so many rules to be followed, so many instructions to follow, so many things that I need to take care. It's too many things, so I hardly dare to move, to do something. And this monk said, you know, it's too much for me. I want to return to lay life. But then, as was often the case, somehow the Buddha came to know about this monk wanting to leave, go back to lay life. And so the Buddha went to where this monk was, you know, with his great understanding, with his great compassion. And he asked him, is it true that you think of disrobing and go back to lay life? And the monk said, yes, you know, it's too confusing. I hardly dare to say something. I hardly dare to do something. It's too much for me. But then the Buddha said, well, would you be willing to stay if you only had to follow one instruction? And the monk was a bit surprised and said, well, yes, I can follow one instruction. So he said, yes. And so then the Buddha said, be mindful anywhere and anytime. simply try to be mindful of everything you do, speak, and think. Let's sit quietly for some moments. Thank you all for your kind attention and being present for this talk. You know, usually talks are in the evening, and in the evening it's always a good time to dedicate and share merits. I know for you it's afternoon or even only morning, but I think to dedicate and share the merits together once a day is a good thing to do. And now I would like to chant together the sharing of blessings. This is a chant you have on your chant sheet. It's on the last page, on page 6. And when, you know, doing this chant, dedicating and sharing the merits or the goodness, bear in mind, you know, the good things that you have done today, also yesterday, past week, past month, last year, or throughout your life. To remember, you know, that there are many good things, many wholesome things that you do, that you have done, to really acknowledge it. And so happily share it with other beings. Such a joy to be able to do that. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of Death, may those who are friendly, indifferent, or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nibbana in every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold. nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble guide. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all this, may darkness and delusion be dispelled. Thank you for